Luke chapter 12 and give you the announcements we have upcoming. Good Hope Through Grace, our radio broadcast. Church's radio broadcast plays tomorrow at 7:30. If you can listen to it, try to do so. We're covering the subject of endurance. We preached last week. We gave reasons why people endure that are genuinely saved. And tomorrow night, we're going to deal with why people don't endure. You see, a lot of people make professions of faith and then they don't endure. So we're going to look at a couple reasons why that's true. And that will be on tomorrow night's prayer. It's several years old sermon, so you guys haven't heard it in a while. And I encourage you to listen to it. Maybe invite someone to listen to it. But if you don't, would you pray for it? Pray that the Lord would use it as it goes out. Okay? Sister Sue's visitation will be tomorrow. It's from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock at Gaten's Funeral Home. So you want to be sure and remember that. Then 11 a.m. On Tuesday morning, her funeral will be here at Elizabeth. So you be sure if you can come, certainly do try to do so and be a part of that. And do pray for Brother Billy and Sister Sandy also as they face this time. As I said, they were married 35 years. I think they got married when they were 18 years old. And be a very difficult time for him and certainly does indeed need the Master's grace. Okay? Well, that's all the announcements that I'm sorry. This coming Thursday at 6 o'clock, some of the ladies are going to be gathering, just meeting together and having dinner at the Olive Garden down in, I'm getting tickled, down in Barbersville. And they'll meet down there at 6 o'clock. If you have any questions about that, just get in touch with Sister Swan and she can give you any information with regard to that. Okay? All right. As I announced this morning, we're going to cover the subject of gambling this evening. We're going to cover, in the next week, some different subjects. I've been looking at this really for some time. And it's a popular issue today. Gambling in the United States has grown tremendously in the past years. Gambling in West Virginia has progressively grown since 1984. I believe it's when they started the lottery, then they start something else. Now they're wanting to start something else and then something else, which makes your government more dependent upon luck money as opposed to what we actually need, which is job money. Manufacturing jobs with insurance and things for people. I'm not going to get off on that. But that's where the payroll needs to be coming from. It makes your government more dependent upon these means. And the more you get into it, as you have seen, the deeper. See, we're not deep enough yet. Once this is done, it'll be something else that is brought up. I can give you some stats, and I'll say that I got these. John Piper used these, so I really didn't go by. He's usually pretty accurate on things that he says. 2001's Americans wagered $57 billion on lotteries. That's on lotteries in the year 2001. It's grown since then. $18 billion on horses and dogs. $592 billion in casinos. And $150 billion on other forms of gambling. So that just gives you an idea of the staggering amount of money that is spent on gambling in the United States, in our land, and certainly now very much so in West Virginia. So what we're going to do tonight is it wrong to gamble? Is it a sin to gamble? I've been in church for years. Traditionally, it's always, in amongst conservative churches, it's always been wrong. Most churches have it in their church covenant. That's a sin to gamble. But increasingly more Christians are buying lottery tickets and gambling. And some churches have bingo where they make money and raffles where they make money and things. So we've always considered it a sin to gamble. But, the Bible doesn't say thou shalt not gamble. I wish it did. It'd be a lot plainer for people. But there's enough principles in God's Word that I believe that we can look at that can more and more than help you make up your mind to see whether it's a sin or not. I think gambling's a sin for five reasons. There's my magic number. It's always five. You ever notice it? I'm going to give you five reasons tonight why I think gambling's a sin. And you know what you have to do? You have to weigh it and see, whether it's so. I go by Bible principles, and that's the main thing that we're going to go to. I've got enough stats to talk about those all night. We're not going to do a lot of that. I don't think I'm going to. Just kind of follow the direction of the Lord and go on. Five reasons why I'm against gambling. I'm going to give you five reasons why I think it's a sin. I'll let Melanie decide what title she wants to use and things. But number one reason why I think gambling's a sin is I think it's a violation of the 10th commandment, which is thou shalt not covet. Thou shalt not covet. I think the gambling institution is a covetous, greedy, greed-staking institution. I think what it's all about, and I think it plays off men and women's, and I must also say boys and girls too. Men and women, boys and girls, it plays off their greed. And isn't that really the great hope of a lot of West Virginians today? Is to, man, I just want to hit the lottery. If I hit the lottery, all my problems will be solved. And they're covetous and they play it because why do really people play it? They're greedy of gain. They're after that gain. And I think covetousness indeed is a sin. Luke chapter 12, if you'll look with me in verse 15. Luke 12 and verse 15, it says, "And he said unto them, take heed." Everybody say, take heed. That means pay close attention to what he's getting ready to say. You take heed to what I'm telling you. You ever have your daddy tell you that? You take heed, boy, to what I'm telling you. Point your finger at you and you know it's serious when he tells you to take heed. Take heed and beware of what? Beware of covetousness. He tells you, he warns you about the sin of covetousness. And I'm telling you that that's what the gambling business is based on. He tells you to beware of it. For a man's life doesn't consist in the abundance of the things that he possesses. And then you know what he goes on and does? He tells you that it's dangerous. He tells you to beware of it. Then he goes on and uses an illustration of why he says to beware of it. And you know what he tells you about in the next text? You all know about it. But if you look at the rest of it, he tells you the parable of the rich farmer or the parable of the rich fool. And he uses that as an illustration of telling you why you shouldn't covet. Because you don't want to end up doing the same thing that this rich fool did. Let's read about it here just a little bit. Verse 16, "He spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth what? Plentiful. And he thought within himself, what shall I do? Because I have no more room to bestow my fruits. And he said, this will I do. I'll pull down my barns, I'll build greater, and there I'll bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry." Now this is the illustration that Jesus used to explain why he said, beware of covetousness. The man in Luke 12 was covetous. His whole life was about gain. He was a rich farmer. That's what possessed his entire being. And it came to pass that his ship come in. I'm not going to say it, but I'm tempted to. He hit the lottery. I mean, you know, his ship came in. And he had such a great harvest, such an abundance of crops, that he wasn't going to have to work all the rest of his days. Well, it looks like he was a very successful businessman, but the Scripture says, God said unto him, "You're a fool, thou fool. This night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall those things be which thou hast provided?" The covetousness of this man's heart caused him to forget what, folks? He forgot God. He forgot eternity, and he forgot about death. And that's what covetousness does. It's a god. It's a god. The book of Colossians says covetousness is idolatry. A lot of people in America might not have a big statue in their front yard that they bow and worship before, but covetousness can become your God. Gain is a lot of Americans' God in the United States. It really is. That's the motivating factor behind their life. That's what they live for. That's what motivates them. They get in their business and it's all about how much they can get and how much they can achieve. And folks, the bad and the danger, that's why it says beware of covetousness, because it can so overwhelm your heart that it causes you to drift away from the Lord. And in this case, this man completely forgot about God. And when the day of his death came, didn't make no difference about those big barns, did it? Didn't make no difference how much money he had. He left it all behind for somebody probably to fight over. And he went out in his eternity with nothing, having lost everything, worst of all, his own soul. Oh, indeed, beware of covetousness. I think it would be interesting to poll people. I think for a lot of people, my great hope is heaven. Send my Lord. How about you tonight? But I dare say a lot of the greatest hope for people in West Virginia and people in the United States is hitting the lottery. That's going to cure all their problems if they do that. That's not so. It tells you to beware of it. It can take over your heart. And I think the gambling institution is based on covetousness. That's one reason why I think it's a sin. 1 Timothy 6, let me give you a few other things. Then we'll move off this. I'm going to get them all in. 1 Timothy chapter 6. What's the first reason I think it's a sin? I think it's a violation of thou shalt not covet. I think that's the basis of it. I think I looked at one sign they had out in Chicago that had ads about the lottery. It says, your ticket out. Your ticket out. And they play upon people's greed. That's exactly what they do. 1 Timothy chapter 6, this is another warning about covetousness. Notice what it says in verse 8, having food and raiment, food and covering, I think it's the idea of that, probably includes your home, place to stay. Having food and covering, let us therewith be what? Be what? Be content with food and covering? It's hard to find anybody that's content with food and covering. It says be satisfied with that. Oh, my, the Lord's went far and above all that with us, hadn't He? Oh, we should thank and praise His name every day for that. Yes. They that will be rich, and again, it's talking about covetousness there, fall into temptations and to what? Well, I told you to beware of it in Luke 12, then it used the illustration of the rich fool. Now it tells you that again here in 1 Timothy chapter 6. It says, they that will be rich, they that live for riches and desire it, and put that as a driving force behind her life, they that will be rich fall into temptation and to what? And a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. Don't seem like the answer to your dreams there, does it? For a lot of people, even some of the people that win the lottery, they have found that all of those millions of dollars bring a tremendous snare to their life. Tremendous snare. And they fell into many snares and traps, foolish things, and it brought to them not joy, it brought to them not peace, but rather it brought to them sorrow after sorrow after sorrow. So that's why it warns you about it. It goes on to say, for the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they've erred from the faith. There's people that have there's many people that are unfaithful to church, and the reason why they're unfaithful to church, one reason is because they don't want to come. I'm not going to get off on that. But another reason, they're so wrapped up in the world and the taking in of covetous things from the world that takes priority over the things of God. Seriously. So it warns you about that because it can cause, and there's been a lot of people that have erred from the truth. I know a pastor that was very, very dear to me. Very, very, very dear to me. And I had preached for years. I had seen him preach before till the tears run down his cheeks as he talked about the things of the Lord. And got real involved with business. Walked completely away from the ministry. Never forget going and seeing him when I was about 16 years old. I was serving the Lord then. And saying, boy, that's been a long time. And I knew he. I said, where you go to church at? And I'll never forget that cold answer. I don't do those things no more. What happened? Covetousness. You see, it says it right here. It goes on and tell you, thou old man of God, flee these things. Run away from these things. You can get so wrapped up in the God of get that it takes over your entire life. And I'm telling you this evening, not only does that apply to unbelievers, but it also applies to people sitting in the church pews too. There's people that walk away from the Lord's house and the Lord's work in pursuit of gain. Covetousness can do that. Remember the parable of the sower? Those that come amongst thorns, and one of the things that chokes them out is the deceitfulness of riches. They think it's going to bring them joy. And we'll say this one more time. If you're saved, your joy comes from the shepherd and fellowship with the shepherd. It doesn't come from achieving of worldly things. Okay? All right. Everybody got point number one? Point number one, I think it's a violation of thou shalt not covet. Money's not to be the driving force behind your life. If you want to look up another verse, you can look it up later. Proverbs 23:4 says, labor not to be rich. Labor not to be rich. Of course, it uses the term labor there. The lottery's not labor. But you're not to put riches as a driving force behind your life because it becomes your God. The driving force behind your life needs to be your God. Needs to be your God. Number two. Ready for number two? 1 Corinthians 6. Yeah, gambling and the answer to that. Gambling's addictive. I must go on to say gambling is very addictive. Very addictive. There's a large portion of people in the United States that are gamblers because the number of people that gamble has grown so much. Let me go ahead and give you some stats. Let me read my text first. 1 Corinthians, I think I got the right text. If not, then somebody will have to help me. I'll have somebody help me find it. 1 Corinthians 6:12. All things are lawful unto me. He's talking about in probably the context. Meat offered to idols, things of that nature. You have, we have some freedoms as Christians in things that we don't have the freedom to go out and sin. But we do have some freedoms to do certain things. It says, all things are lawful unto me, but all things are not expedient. All things are not profitable. All things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. And to be brought under the power of something means to be made a slave to it. Everybody say slave to it. That's the idea of being made a slave to it. I won't be made a slave to anything. And it's speaking of addictions. We got to have our bodies under control. And we all realize tonight that addictions take many. There's many types of addictions. I preached a message on addictions. One of them's tobacco. Number two, one of them's alcohol. Number three, one of them's drugs. Number four, one of them's pornography. All of those are addictions. Everybody in the house agree with those four? Just trying to remember my mind, I was looking at a stat on alcoholism, and I believe those that have problems with alcohol, I mean alcoholism, 15 million in the United States. Does that alarm you? That's pretty bad, isn't it? Now, do you want to know why tonight the government don't come out with a sign pushing people to drink? It tells you to drink responsibly, but it don't come out saying, hey, come on down to the local bar and drink. It warns you. The government warns you about drinking in some of their ads. Have you ever seen any of them? How about smoking? Do they do the same thing with smoking? Why do they not push smoking? Because it's what? It's addictive. And they realize that smoking's affected a lot of the citizens in America. Same thing with drinking. They do the same thing with that. They recognize that's a problem for 15 million Americans, and they realize it's led to many deaths, so they don't really stand against it. I'm not going to give them that much credit. They don't really stand against it, but they don't come out with these big millions of dollar ads to try to get people to drink. You know, they don't do that with pornography either, Hollis. They don't come out, the government don't come out in support of pornography because they realize that's addictive and they realize how many young people and things that's affect. So they don't come out in support of none of those addictions. But boy, they sure don't come out again. And with regard to gambling, which is another addiction, they sure do stand for that, though, don't they? Why don't they at least not support that to go along with the other addictions they do not support, so-called? Do you see where I'm coming from? They come out with billboards about it. Turn on the television, see the little ball going up the tube for all the numbers. It's the answer to all of our problems, you know. Why don't they do that? No, they support that addiction. They just support that addiction with millions of dollars of ads campaign every year. And it's addictive to people. I'll give you some of the stats with regard to that. I think it's inconsistent, don't you? Here's some of the stats I have. 2.5 million adults in America are pathological gamblers. That means fatally addicted to gambling. Those who are pathological gamblers usually run up debts between $50,000 and $90,000 a year. Times that by $2.5 million and see how much money that is. That's a lot of money. That's just the debts they run up. 3 million are considered problem gamblers. 15 million are at risk for gambling or are at risk for problem gamblings or gambling. About 148 million are low risk gamblers. So it has it's an addictive thing. Now you always know what my stance is on addictions, don't you? Drinking's an addiction, or alcohol's an addiction. Pornography's addiction, drugs is an addiction, tobacco's an addiction. You know how the best way to keep from any of them addictions are, don't you? You know how the best way is to keep from being addicted to any of these things? Don't do it one time. Don't do it one time. Well, I think it applies to gambling, too, because it's just as addictive as anything else it is. And there's just almost probably as many addicted to it as there is to alcohol. Just as many. But it has what? Government support. See? You see the inconsistency? So the second reason that I'm just dead set against it is because it is an addiction that afflicts millions of people in the United States. And that has to be conceded because it indeed does. 15 million all told. Some of the stats are given. Now, I'm still under the addictive part of it. You know who I'm most concerned? I'm concerned for everybody. You know who I'm most concerned about is young people. They see the ads. They see the ads. They see the government support. So it must be what? It's okay. Here's some stats on youth gambling. It says the statistics are alarming. This is by the Illinois Institute for Addiction Recovery. It says a survey of adolescents found that more than 80% of those between 12 and 17 say they've gambled in the last 12 months. More than 35% say they gamble at least once a week. This is ages between 12 and 17. Clearly, gambling addiction is not just an adult problem. I also read to where that people that start at around age 14 are most likely to become pathological gamblers, hooked on it. Hooked on it tremendously to where they just gamble everything away, bum money to gamble, take advantage of people to gamble, and it's a sad, sad state of affairs. Let me read you a little bit more and I'll move on. Another article, a 1997 survey. I'm sorry. The next generation is the first in modern American history to grow up in an era where gambling is legally sanctioned and culturally approved. Tragically, adolescents have proven extremely susceptible to the enticements of gambling and are becoming hooked at rates even greater than their adult counterparts. Scholars and researchers caution that we may be only seeing the tip of the icebergs and the seeds of the destruction being sown in these young lives today portend immense individual and cultural devastation as we enter the 21st century. In 1997, a survey of 12,000 6th through 12th graders in Louisiana found that 86% had gambled. Almost 6% of the students surveyed by Louisiana State University Medical School researchers met the criteria for pathological gambling, while 16% could be classified as problem gamblers. A survey of Atlantic City High School students showed that 64% had gambled at the city's casinos. That's not legal, is it? 64% had gambled at the city's casinos. 21% reported visiting the casinos more than 10 times. In 1995, New Jersey casinos reporting ejecting nearly 26,000 underage persons, sometime after they had managed to enter the casinos. Another 136,000 juveniles attempted to enter the casinos but were prevented from doing so. I go on and on and on. But the problem is, as I'm saying, it's addictive. It's just not affecting adults. It's affecting our young people. And with government support, it tells them it's okay. It's okay. And I'm telling you, it's dangerous when they pick up these type of habits whenever they're young. That's my second problem with it. Okay? Number three, here's my third problem with it. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 22, I'll just tell you what that says. It says that we're to abstain from all appearance of evil. And I'm telling you, gambling has a lot of associated sins with it. What I'm trying to say is where all these casinos and things are at, there's a lot of other bad things that's associated with gambling. Do you agree with that? Prostitution, drugs, alcohol. Many of the casinos I've seen where they run ads sometimes for free, they give away free liquor. Free liquor night. Wonder why they do that. To get suckers in there. So if they can bleed them dry. Which is exactly what they do. There's a lot of vice that goes along with gambling that you need to personally be aware of. I'm going to read several things here. Several things that I really thought was interesting. I want to give to you. You'll find this one real interesting. This is an article in our paper, not in a paper in Beckley, but I'll let you look at it if you'd like. Now listen to this now. Charleston Mayor Danny Jones certainly has no love for the slot parlors in the 2000 law created. In fact, he was able to close down one Charleston parlor that did not comply with city restrictions. Bless his heart. Speaking to the American Business Club in Charleston chapter this week, Jones said he is no fan of gambling. In fact, he said he respects the opinions of those who object to gambling on religious or moral grounds. I appreciate that. But Jones is practical, and he has a city to run. For that reason, he supports the August 11th Kanawha County initiative that would allow Tri-State Racetrack Gambling Center and Nitro to offer casino-style table games. Now listen, real tight. He sees the table games as a more palatable form of gambling than the limited video lottery parlors that have popped across Charleston and the rest of the state. He believes gambling concentrated at the tracks is a better deal than neighborhood mini casinos. And you know why he believes that? Because I'm against those parlors in this city, he said, because that's where all the trouble is. I'm thankful for that. That is where all the trouble is. There's a lot of trouble that is associated with that. Drunkenness, drug trafficking, prostitution, all these things. They want to get that out of the city and get it closer to the Putnam County line right up here on the long side of the interstate. It's still the same thing. Put the trouble there. I also read where that draws more out-of-state gambling. I almost drove out there to see how many West Virginia license tags I seen, but I was afraid someone would see me. I guarantee you they ain't all from out of state out there. I guarantee you they ain't all from out of state out there. A lot of associated sins with it. Let me give you another stat, and I'm going to move on. This article is entitled, "So You Want to Be Like Nevada?" Nevada's rank among states in the category. Nevada was ranked for 9 years in a row the most dangerous state in the nation. It never has dropped below number 3. It ranks number 1 in suicide. Number 1 in divorce. Number 1 in prostitution. Number 1 in women killed by men. And number 1 in gambling addictions. You want me to go on? I don't want to be like Nevada. When you bring in those type of things and you isolate them in one place, there's a lot of associated sins that comes along with it. There's a lot of increase of crime. One article I looked at that talked about Atlantic City, since they sold their soul to the casino business, crime went up 100% in a 30-mile radius around it. I remember seeing that on television. Showed some old man. He said, I told you about it. He said, I remember when I used to be able to walk down this street at night. He said, you wouldn't dare walk down the street now. So there's a lot of associated sins that comes with it. That's one reason why they're trying to put them at the racetrack, see, trying to get them out away from the city. They recognize what comes with it. But they want the what? That's what motivates it. Number 4. Am I right, number 4? I think it's a violation of thou shalt not steal. I think it's a violation. Now, people get mad at you. You use that, you quote that to get mad at you. But I think it's a violation of thou shalt not steal. And number 2, to go along, I think it's a violation of the golden rule, too. For people to win, thousands have to lose. And you're making money off other people's misfortune. Also, you're taking money from people and they're not getting anything in return. That's theft. It's a form of theft. Several things that I've read with regard to the odds of winning a lottery. You know what they are? John MacArthur said you're more likely to get ate by a shark on a beach than you are to win the lottery. Now, I didn't say a shark out in the water. I said a shark on the beach. Than you are to win the lottery. You're 7 times more likely to get hit by lightning than you are to win the lottery. Okay, let me read you some things. I got a whole list of funny things, but I just want to read a few. This man says, if none of the above has convinced you to stop playing the lottery, then I'll bring out my favorite lottery fact. If you drive 10 miles to purchase your lottery ticket, it's 3 to 20 times more likely for you to be killed in a car wreck along the way than to win the jackpot. And to win the jackpot. Okay? And there's a whole bunch of him that he wrote down. It's John Piper writes, you got for the lottery, you got a 1 in 135,145,920 chance of winning. That's no chance at all. For thousands upon millions of people. Most of the people that play it, make under $20,000 a year. Many of them play it, make less than $10,000 a year. You know what that means? You know who that's taking advantage of the most? taking advantage of poor people is what it is. People that can ill afford to spend the money that they're on, spending on a dream that doesn't happen. These billions upon billions of dollars that is spent for this is money that's taken out of businesses. Money that could be spent in buying and selling and actually getting something for what you're paying for. Millions and millions and millions of people get nothing for it. It's a form of theft, I believe. And a lot of the brethren say it's a poor man's tax. And in many cases, and that's offensive. Don't say that a lot. It makes people mad. But I believe it's the truth. This, that. Players with household incomes under $10,000 bet nearly three times as much on lotteries as those with incomes of over $50,000. Three times as much money. So it's taking advantage of people that are indeed poor to the largest degree. Okay? So I think it's a violation of that. I think it's a vain hope. I think it's a vain hope, especially when you look at the numbers. And I think that's exactly what it does, is take advantage of poor people. Number five, I think it's a stumbling block issue for God's people. I think if the people of the world look and see you scratching off a lottery ticket in a convenience store and you're a member of Elizabeth Baptist Church, I think that's a stumbling block issue. I think that's a stumbling block issue. That person that might be buying one behind you might think it's okay because they see a Christian buying it. So I think it's a stumbling block issue. Turn to the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 8. 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Verse 9 says, take heed. There you have it again. Take heed. 1 Corinthians 8, verse 9. Take heed lest by any means this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to them that are weak. Do we not use that with regard to drinking? I don't go. I've debated with people over before, and I realize the Bible condemns drunkenness. I realize that. But with 15 million alcoholics in our land and such an overwhelming amount of people and young people that have problems with alcohol, I think abstinence is the best policy for God's people. I think if someone see me walk in at the local shortstop and come out with a quart of beer, and I say, well, I'm not drinking to get drunk. I'm just doing it because I'm going to drink a little bit of it because I'm thirsty. I think that would be devastating to the people that would see me do that. Do you all agree with me on that? I think that would be devastating to young people to see me do that. So I completely abstain from it. Completely abstain from it. Because I believe it's a stumbling block issue. And other things I abstain from because I believe are a stumbling block issue. And I think gambling falls right underneath that. That's the fifth reason why I'm against it. God's people need to keep themselves from such things. With so many people that have that problem, you don't want them justifying what they do because they see you doing it. Well, the preacher does it. That's the fifth reason. Well, let me give you all five again. Let me give you all five. It's a violation of thou shalt not covet. It's addictive. Sin of association. It breeds vice. And that's proven. You can see it. Look at Atlantic City. Look at where they have that. They've sold or sold to that. Look at the crime and thing. Number four. It's a violation of thou shalt not steal in the golden rule because you're making money off someone's loss. And number five, I believe it's a stumbling block issue. So those are five reasons why that I think it's sin. Okay? Well, Jeff, we're using it for good reasons. They're not using it totally for good reasons. If it's wrong, then it's wrong. If you come up and you say, we're going to legalize prostitution, and we're going to take all the proceeds from all that taxes from the prostitution, we're going to build hospitals with it, it would still be wrong to be a prostitute. Because the ends never justify. That's exactly what's done. So that don't fly with regard to that. The stock market, I don't believe the stock market's gambling. A lot of people try to say the stock market is gambling. It's different. First of all, in the stock market, you're not making money off somebody's loss. Number two, the stock market, you're kind of like a little owner in a company. So you're getting something for what you're putting into it. And if you play the stock market on long range, it's always showed a gain. So I don't think you can say it's the same as going and playing these lottery games at all. The state does fund some good things with lottery. I'll tell you that. But we have no control over how our legislature divvies out the money. You hear what I just said? They take money from alcohol taxes. They tax alcohol, don't they? All that goes in the fund, don't it? They take money from cigarettes, taxes, money from selling of filthy books. That all goes into a big coffer, doesn't it? Along with lottery money, along with all your what? You should have jumped all that, along with our taxes. All of that's in one fund. Everybody with me? And then the legislature divvies that out for certain things. You have no control over that. So there are certain things that somebody, the Promise Scholarship is half funded by the lottery. Is it wrong to take the Promise Scholarship? The legislature could have funded the Promise Scholarship with just our tax dollars. They's the one that chose to do it through the means of the lottery. You say, well, I'm not going to accept it because they chose to do it that way. Well, don't drive on the highways either because they take alcohol money and build roads with it. See what I mean? You put yourself in a pretty big bind if you take that position. We have no control with how the legislature divvies out the money. They could do it just with our taxes. But they've chose to put everything in the car and divide it out as they see fit. So that's the way I see that. Okay? I hope it's been a blessing to you. I hope it's helped you in some way. That's how I feel about it. Now, I believe that's the stand of this church. We've been against it for as long as I can remember. And we'll continue to be against it for those five reasons right there. Let's all stand. All right.